Hi, it's Dacker. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it, Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness.
I have brittle bone disease. It's called osteogenesis imperfecta. And I grew up, everything would be fine for quite a while, and then I would just randomly break an arm, you know, doing something pretty minor, like, you know, I'd fall out of my wheelchair, but other kids would not have broken their arm, right? And so you get this idea of the impermanence of life at a pretty young age if you have this disability, because your life really goes dramatically one way or another in a blink of an eye. But the funny thing is everybody is actually living in the same place, but we just don't acknowledge it. And so I think that's where disability has taught me a lot about how we're all very finite beings. I mean, we all have areas we could work on, and I don't feel like I'm a not compassionate person, but I do feel like that's something that I could be better at, you know? Especially right now when, you know, as a disabled person who is taking COVID very seriously, I mean, we went on a drive up the North Shore of Lake Superior one day, and a lot of people were out not wearing masks and, like, standing close together. And I was like, I am going to have to work on my own sense of compassion so that I don't leave this situation feeling bitter or angry at, you know, whoever it is that's choosing to not follow the guidelines, because it does hurt. But I don't want it to poison the way I feel about humanity in general, you know? There's a real possibility for those kind of feelings to run away. And then you lose sight of just the fact that we are all connected and we're all valuable. And that includes people that I strongly disagree with. You know what I mean?
For people who are immunocompromised, when and how they can stop quarantining during COVID-19 is directly affected by other people's health decisions. That can bring a lot of feelings of anxiety, uncertainty, and anger. I'm Dacher Keltner, and this is The Science of Happiness. Our guest today, Galen Lee, is a violinist, singer, and disability rights activist. She joins us from her home in Duluth, Minnesota, after trying out a science-tested practice to help her find her grounding. Galen, it's a pleasure to have you on our show.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to ask you, Galen, what led you to music?
What drew me to music was this orchestra. It was just like the middle school orchestra came and played at our elementary school when I was in fourth grade, and I just fell in love with the sound of the strings. I was just hooked. And so the next year, I went to the music listening test that you had to take in order to join orchestra, and I was the only student that year that got a perfect score. and I think that that's why, because of that perfect score, the teacher was like, well, clearly she needs to be able to find a way to do this.
Yeah.
But she was honest. She's like, I don't know if this will work, and I've never taught someone to play differently before, and I might not be able to, but let's try it out. And so we experimented with a bunch of different instruments. I wanted to do the cello, but it was too big for me. I have a very small frame, and it just couldn't figure it out. And then eventually we hit upon the idea of playing the violin up and down like a cello.
Uh-huh.
And I hold my bow like a bass player, like an upright bass player.
Wow.
And so she was just the right person. Unfortunately, that's not the case a lot of times. Students with disabilities get discouraged from doing that a lot. And I just never had any idea until I started getting out on the road how lucky I was to have her as my teacher. Songwriting came a lot later, actually. 17 years later is when I wrote my first song.
What makes you think that you'll ever get there? What makes you think you deserve to know? Who are you really? Are you so important? Take a look around and watch the world unfold.
Why did you get that perfect score on music listening? What do you think that says?
I attribute that to my dad. When I was a little kid, I remember this. I would be in the car, and one of the ways we would pass the time is he would be like, okay, repeat after me. La, 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 la. And he would make me sing back all these different, you know, melody lines that he would invent on the spot. I think he had actually, like, inadvertently done ear training with me as a little girl.
And I can't feel at home in this world.
I'm curious as to why you chose the loving kindness meditation, where you direct love and compassion to yourself and loved ones, and then people outside of your circles. What led you to choose this practice?
You know, the shelter in place, the first month or so, I kind of had to work on getting out of some depression. There was, you know, a period of time of just kind of a lot of overwhelm. But then I was starting to adjust, like, I have a disability, obviously, and so I'm high risk, partly because my lungs are very small. Mm. And so it started dawning on me in the end of March, early April, that this is going to be a little longer term than I had planned on. And so there was a period of adjustment, but then we are really trying to make the best of a not great situation. So we, you know, started focusing on other hobbies, my husband and I, and so I thought this would be a good time to explore the loving kindness meditation.
Nice.
The other reason is I have PTSD from an experience where I lost lung function, I had respiratory failure, and luckily, obviously, I survived. But it's very scary not being able to breathe. Yeah. And so I've struggled with meditation for a really long time. And I found out later that a lot of people with PTSD do, because it triggers these unpleasant, like, not just memories, but physical sensations.
Can you walk us through the steps of the loving kindness meditation?
Yes, I can. So the loving kindness meditation is pretty simple. You sit and kind of calm your mind, and then you call to mind someone that you love easily without a lot of conflict in your lives, and you wish them that they will be well, that they'll be happy and free from suffering. And you picture really saying that to them. And then the next person you bring to mind is someone you don't know as well, and you say those same phrases to them. And then you bring to mind someone that you have difficulty feeling compassionate for, someone that you struggle with, and you say those same things to them. May you be well, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering. And then you call to mind yourself and give yourself that same compassion with those phrases. And then how I ended it was expanding that compassion to the whole world and just kind of sending those sentiments out to every being on the planet. And then you just kind of sit until you feel ready to move on with your day, basically. It took me about 10 minutes every day that I did it.
How'd it go for you?
Well, that's the part that was so fun. So I was like, okay, now I really got to do this. If I'm going to do this podcast, I can't not actually do the practice, right? And so when I was going to do this meditation, the first day I went online and I started looking for guided versions, because guided meditations work better for me just because of that sitting still and not having anything to center your awareness on. It really helps to have sound for me for the anxiety. And so I went and I looked for a bunch, and I found like 3 or 4 different ones, but none of them really did the trick. So I am a music person, right? And so I got this software, and I looked for some sound effects of birds and of water, because I know that for me, with that meditating anxiety, sounds really comfort me. And so I put together my own version. And one thing I did that wasn't in the original is I've also read the meditation Just Like Me where you really humanize, like you humanize someone you struggle with. Like they have problems just like me.
Yeah.
They feel sad just like me. And so I found a version of just like me. So before I even send loving kindness to the person that I struggle with, I have like reflected on how we are similar, you know, and then, then I can send them loving kindness from a more authentic place. And so one thing I did because of COVID is I started doing weekly concerts on YouTube, right? And so I decided to trim that down and I put it out on all my social medias. And people were like, I really needed to hear that today. Mm. Like, thanks for sending that. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be free from suffering. And then you let that go. It's just kind of a good reminder that we're all struggling and everybody just wants to be happy. And like that reminder by itself, I thought that I was going to direct my meditations specifically to the people who aren't like following the guidelines, but that didn't end up happening.
Interesting.
That kind of came in when I would send my loving kindness to the whole world. Those people would come to my awareness and I would send it to them too. But really, it's the first person that comes to mind is who you're supposed to think of. And so I didn't try to contrive that. And so it was different people every day.
And who'd you think about? Who were some of the people?
Well, my dog was one of them for the loving ones. And my husband, of course.
Oh.
And then some days he was the one you're challenged by.
Oops.
So like, every day is different. And that's kind of what I realized. It's like every day is different.
So, you know, one of the hard things about this exercise, Galen, is obviously the last part of it where you move from people you care about or dogs or, you know, the beings you love and you move to acquaintances and then you get to people you really struggle with, you have challenges with, even enemies. And I'm curious what that was like for you.
The reason that I added that part in my own meditation about this person has feelings just like me, this person has struggles just like me and has felt peaceful just like me, those sentiments, I had to put that in first because I was having trouble just straight up transitioning because I think we separate ourselves from the people that we struggle with and we forget their humanness. And so one enlightening time for me was, I think I was thinking of Mitch McConnell that day. I don't know how political we're allowed to be on this podcast, but that's the reality. And so I was thinking of Mitch McConnell, and I remember having this thought during this section of the meditation that if I'm wishing him freedom from suffering, like I think what I am wishing him is just the ability to release all the burdens that he must carry around. I don't have to know what that suffering is, but that suffering is also things like anger and resentment and hatred, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that I made up a story about Mitch McConnell and now we're best friends or something, but like just the idea that acknowledging that he may have suffered in ways that I don't know and that I can wish him well, and the wellness doesn't have to include like him being on a yacht, like getting everything he desires. It can be as simple as like, hopefully he can be at peace with humanity. You know, that's what we all need. You know what I mean? And so I don't necessarily have to expect him to change because I'm doing this meditation because I can't change him, but I can wish him well. And to me, being well means being free from hatred and prejudice and greed, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't get to control it, but I can send those vibes out there, I guess.
You know, you did this practice during shelter in place. You're immunocompromised, you're in isolation, that's hard. You talked about something a lot of us are feeling right now, which is depression or dysphoria. And we know that this practice can activate parts of your body that help your immune system, like the vagus nerve. It can make you feel calmer about the hard things in life. How did it affect you in this moment?
Well, I think it did make me feel calmer. I mean, not necessarily like the effects would last 24 hours, right? But whenever I do the meditation, I notice just different parts of my body kind of unwinding.
Mm.
So I think that loving kindness meditation kind of like allowed me to reconnect with the part of myself that maybe wasn't going to activate as quickly when I'm responding to all of these different things in my own mind. So I'm just glad that, that you can kind of connect with this idea of the universalness of the loving kindness meditation, I guess.
Yeah. You know, and one of the things that
just strikes me in the connection between the science of compassion and what you're describing, Galen, is just some people have thought of compassion cultivated by loving kindness as kind of soft, but it actually allows you to like sort of pause and go into the harder parts of human existence like we're facing today of pandemics and social unrest and find a path and get engaged.
I think for me, it has allowed me a chance every day to touch like a rock that's firmer than me, right? So like compassion, I think, is something like one of the bedrocks of the human experience. I mean, I'm a spiritual person, so I think of that as love, and I think of love as God, right? But even if you didn't, I mean, just touching something that's bigger than your problems is a helpful practice. And one thing it does, not in like a judgmental way, but I think it's important that you give love to your enemies before you give love to yourself in this exercise, because what it reminds you is that we're not perfect either.
We pulled the weeds out till the dawn, near be too tired to carry on. Someday we'll linger in the sun, and I love you.
And like, I think that's a part of compassion, is acknowledging that everybody is in this situation where they're doing the best they can from where they're at, and they're going to make mistakes, but they still deserve to be well and happy and free from suffering. And just recognizing that this is not you, perfect being, sitting on a rock, giving it to other people. It's like you in the battlefield with everybody, right? And making your own mistakes and then having a little more grace for people when they make theirs, you know? And I've only been doing it a couple weeks, and I'm curious if I'm hoping, because what I've read about meditation is the effects of meditation hold on longer and longer the more you do it. You know what I mean? So I would like to see that be something that like affects the way I actually respond to annoyances, for example. I haven't gotten there yet. Like, my apartment is 500 square feet, and my husband and I have been here since March, so we tend to get on each other's nerves sometimes. So, like, that part, I don't think I've noticed that change yet, where it's, like, made me less reactive, I guess, but I have a feeling. I mean, there's a reason this stuff is around, right? So you touch that part where you acknowledge that we're all in this struggle together, really, for real, for real, that I assume eventually that will shape my daily response to everything going on. But at least I can touch it, right, once a day. I think that's pretty cool. I really think it's something that everybody, especially now when there's so much going on, yeah, and division and anger and frustration and injustice, it's like,
yeah,
connecting to that core compassion part is really important.
Well, being with you today, Galen, has been just an enlightening experience for me. And I want to thank you for your voice and your music and your activism and for being on The Science of Happiness today. So thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It seems easy, but it's so hard to do. Feels too empty when we're facing the truth. Facing the truth.
Studies show that loving kindness can make us feel more joy, compassion, and awe. But how far can those good feelings extend?
The thing that I thought was really amusing is it even made you feel more positively towards the lamp. Right? You're like, oh yeah, I really like this lamp. I really feel some sort of weird connection to this inanimate object.
More on the science of the loving kindness practice up next.
What I think meditative practices generally are doing, as well as loving kindness meditation specifically, is practicing how to direct your attention in the way you want it to go.
Sindri Hutcherson is a psychologist and the director of the Toronto Decision Neuroscience Laboratory at the University of Toronto.
So for loving kindness meditation, what you are practicing is constantly bringing your attention to the other person.
Sindri wanted to see if directing this loving attention towards others in our minds affects the way we think about people in the real world. So her team recruited one group to do the loving kindness practice. They were instructed to close their eyes, relax, take some deep breaths, and imagine being surrounded by people who deeply cared for them.
Then what we do is we have people open their eyes and look at, you know, the person that we want them to direct loving energy towards. And then we have them repeat a number of phrases designed to really help you kind of feel that loving energy.
May you be happy. May you be well. May you live with ease.
May you be comfortable, et cetera, et cetera. So you would look at the person that you directed loving kindness towards, and we would say, how much do you like this person? How close or connected do you feel? How similar do you feel towards them? And then we'd have you look at somebody that you hadn't really focused on and ask those same questions. And then we had people focus, in this case, it was a picture of a lamp, and they would say, you know, how close or connected they felt to the lamp.
Sendri's team had another group also close their eyes, relax, and take deep breaths. But this group imagined being surrounded by acquaintances, people they didn't know very well. And instead of loving kindness, they focused on physical appearances.
You know, how's their face shaped? What color are their eyes?
They then opened their eyes and looked at a picture of a stranger, again focusing on the visual details of their appearance. They were also shown photos of random people and the lamp while researchers measured their responses. Sendri and her team found that the group that did the loving kindness practice basically felt more positivity towards everything.
So it definitely increased your positivity, your care, your connection for the person that you were looking at specifically, but it also increased your care and feelings of kindness toward people that you hadn't looked at. And the thing that I thought was really amusing is it even made you feel more positively towards the lamp. Right? You're like, oh yeah, I really like this lamp. I really feel some sort of weird connection to this inanimate object.
In another study, Sendri and her team found that the loving kindness meditation activates a part of the brain that is usually active when we think about people we feel similar to and care about, the prefrontal cortex.
Interestingly, it's also an area that seems to be more active for things that, just generally, things that you find rewarding and that you really like and value. And what we found, really robustly, is that when you are engaged in loving kindness, this area, the medial prefrontal cortex, is more active. It just generates such a powerful sense of positivity and well-being. And I think that's reflected in these brain regions. And so if you can sort of create an association between those mental and physiological responses towards somebody you love, but create that association towards somebody that you've previously had some difficulty with or somebody who maybe you have some prejudice towards, I think that's where we're sort of creating those links where they're not there. And so what's different about that versus just sort of telling somebody, oh, this person is really great, is I don't think that just simply saying somebody is great evokes those kinds of strong emotional feelings. I don't think it evokes the physiology. And so I don't think it creates as strong an association. If you can sort of remember what it's like to care about somebody, to empathize with their suffering, to want good things to happen for them, that feeling is really powerful.
I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining me on The Science of Happiness. If you'd like to try the loving kindness meditation, visit our Greater Good in Action website at ggia.berkeley.edu. We've created resources exploring the psychology of racism. Visit greatergood.berkeley.edu/antiracism to learn more. Our podcast is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRX. Our senior producer is Shuka Kalantari. Production assistance is from Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our associate producers are Ariella Markowitz and Nina Sparling. Our executive producer is Jane Park. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. Our science director is Emiliana Simon-Thomas. Tell us what you'd like to hear more of by using the hashtag #HappinessPod or emailing us at greater@berkeley.edu.